my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
The tequila that we make is of the earth. Sustainability is something that's important to us at Terramana. We grow our beautiful agave plants at the highest of elevations. There's not a lot of water that gets to them when we're this high. So all these beautiful agave plants that you see surrounding me right now take years to grow to get them to the maturity to get them just right. After we grow the agave for this long, we use the leftover agave fibers as fertilizer for our soil. Also, we'll actually plant corn, which acts as a really good fertilizer, creating a soil for us that's really nice and healthy, and then we plant new baby agaves to start the process all over again. Really, where I'm standing, this is the origins of our Terramana tequila. This is where it all starts. It's right here. You know, when I come out here to our agave fields and I spend some time, my gratitude is boundless.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 304 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. I am Kevin Huntsberger, one of your co-hosts. Now, you heard Dwayne The Rock Johnson off the top, and it is much disappointment that The Rock is not the co-host. Instead, I have The Croc himself, Chad Smart, and honestly, I believe this is the first in-person podcast I have done since the start of COVID-19, and I don't know if we're breaking rules here. I don't think so. We're in my house, so it's okay, I think, to have someone in your house and do a podcast, I guess. I don't know.
Sorry.
He's bringing the comedy.
I had to remove my mask there. I think we're safe. It's just two guys sitting alone getting ready to drink.
Yes.
That's
but we're not drinking alone, which is key here.
Yeah, and just remember, if your dog's home, you're never drinking alone.
That's true. And I'm going to butcher the name, even though we just listened to that audio with The Rock. Terramana? Is that how he said it? Terramana Tequila. So, quick backstory on this. I had been looking for a while for this tequila because it's, of course, something that The Rock is doing in one of the many projects that he does. This is made in Mexico. It is gluten-free, which I didn't know tequila had gluten, but I wanted to try it, though, obviously because of The Rock and, you know, my adoration for him. And this is a wrestling podcast, and, you know, we do the wrestling under the influence. And we're going to talk about The Rock and the tequila and a variety of other things, too, as we kind of move along here. Tequila is probably my worst enemy when it comes to alcoholic beverages. I have done some pretty not good things under the influence of tequila. So I'm not going to have a lot, but I am going to drink it to try it to see. And you have really, since COVID started, have not done a whole lot of drinking yourself.
Until tonight, I have not had a drink since the end of March. So,
wow.
So, yeah. So, thanks, Kevin, for ruining my 5 months of sobriety.
There you go. So, The Rock is just one of these people who I think, you know, we've kind of talked about The Rock before, and I'm going to pop this open and start pouring. And we're going to just, I don't have any recipes and I don't have anything fancy to do with this. But, if you live in Southern Illinois and are listening to this, I actually picked this up at Big Daddy in Pittsburgh, Illinois. And, it's available at other liquor stores, so you don't have to go all the way to Pittsburgh if you're not in the area. And I don't even know how much to pour here, so I'm going to just pour some. And And I don't know if you want more, help yourself to more.
I was going to say, just give me a shot, but.
That's more than a shot. That's okay, yeah. though. So, you know, The Rock is obviously one of those guys who, when he came in 1996, a much different look than what we know him as today, or even what we came to know him primarily, you know, as Rocky Maivia. And we've kind of talked about, I think we talked about this on the Father's Day episode, you know, if anyone has surpassed their father's legacy, it's obviously Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And that's not to take anything away from Rocky Johnson, who was The Rock's father, and the High Chief Peter Maivia, who was his grandfather. There's no taking anything away from those talents, but The Rock, even as a wrestler, I feel like surpassed him. But if you throw in this whole entertainment thing and now the XFL, which I want to talk to you about that as well, because you had season tickets to the XFL. I mean, it's hard to argue The Rock is probably the most successful multi-generation star, maybe outside of Vince McMahon.
You know, I would even probably say the most successful wrestler in history overall, just with the ventures that he's done outside of the business.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sure, Hulk Hogan was popular in WWF back in the mid-80s.
Right.
His movies didn't set the box office on fire.
Mm-hmm.
No one is clamoring for a remake of Suburban Commando. Although, now that I mention it, hey, Rock, you know, make movies, maybe look into that. But, and you know, and I think when Rocky even started in Hollywood with The Scorpion King, with Walking Tall, I don't think anybody would have expected him to be what he is now.
Right.
You know, I'm kind of surprised that Steve Austin kind of fizzled on the B-movie circuit in that regard. But I think Austin was giving the fans what he thought the fans wanted. Like, he stayed in the action realm.
Right.
Whereas we know from his WWE stuff, WWF, that he's great at comedy. And I think and he's in Grown Ups 2.
I haven't seen that.
He's at the very end. He's got a small part.
Uh-huh.
But I think if he would have tried to branch out and do like a comedic role, I think he probably would have been better off than just sticking to low budget action movies. The Rock, even though he has made a name in action movies, he has branched out into, you know, I think Be Cool, where he plays, you know, a gay, I don't remember if he's like the bodyguard or what his actual role, but he tried to showcase the different personalities. And obviously The Rock exudes personality.
Sure.
You know,
well, you know, I'm going to say something, and I don't want this to be perceived the wrong way by listeners, because I love Steve Austin. You know, on my Mount Rushmore of wrestlers, of that my favorites, Austin and The Rock are, you know, 3 and 4, pretty interchangeably, just kind of depending on the mood I'm in. I would rotate those two guys in and my top four. I feel like, though, when it comes to outside of wrestling, Dwayne Johnson exudes a different type of vibe and a different type of personality. Whereas I think Stone Cold Steve Austin, much like Hulk Hogan and even Rowdy Roddy Piper, they were all wrestlers in movies.
Yes.
Whereas Dwayne Johnson is a legitimate bona fide actor, in my opinion, an action star. And in some levels, you know, an actor. And I also see John Cena. I don't see him having the same level of success, but I don't view John Cena as, oh, did you see this WWE guy in a movie? It's, you know, John Cena is going to carve his own niche, I think, as a film star as well. And I just think that that's part of the reason why Austin, maybe he was a wrestler in these roles, whereas I feel like there's just something, a different vibe, a different ambiance. I don't know what the technical term would be, but I feel like Dwayne gives us something different.
Well, I would say that probably goes into Hogan and Austin made movies that featured Hulk Hogan and Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Dwayne Johnson made movies that featured Dwayne Johnson instead of The Rock.
Right.
And so that's, you know, even taking in The Miz into consideration, he makes movies that, from what I understand, because I've never seen a movie with The Miz, but it makes movies that star The Miz, not Mike Mizanin.
Right, and okay, so, that's a good point.
And I think John Cena, I'm curious to see what he does, because he was in Trainwreck, the Amy Schumer movie, and I think he did a good job of self-deprecating his image. But is he going to be doing more rounded roles, or is he going to just be playing kind of stock John Cena?
That's a really good point, because now that I think about it, you know, no holds barred, which is really, other than I did watch Santa with Muscles for some reason.
I believe I showed that to you, didn't
you
I?
You did. And maybe we'll do a review around Christmas time. But, you know, the movie posters do say Hulk Hogan. It doesn't say Terry Bollea. So that's a good point. And I never really thought much about that. But, yeah, I could see that. But I also think that – I don't know, man. I just – I and I haven't even had any of this yet. But, you know, if I may – go into the whole, you know, if there's such a thing as this man crush concept, I mean, The Rock would be my man crush. I mean, I think very highly of him and his successes, and, you know, it's translated very well from beyond the ring, and I feel like he's only gotten bigger and more significant
since leaving. I think he's gotten bigger.
Right. I mean, physically, yeah. Bigger as well, so should we try some... How do we say this?
Terramana.
Cheers.
Woo-hoo-hoo. Could use a lime.
Is it chasing? Yeah, I didn't really think about that. I probably should have planned this better. This is kind of spontaneous in that a couple weeks ago you asked when the next Stride Pro Wrestling show is. I told you and you came out, you know, you booked the flight out of parts unknown in Southern California. And made the trek out here. And I don't want to get too far off the Rock conversation, but let's deviate because I brought it up. You had your Stride Pro Wrestling debut over the weekend as well.
Yeah, I guess because the last time that I did any type of refereeing or announcing, that was AAPW. Or
Pro Wrestling Collision.
Collision, yes. The second incarnation of Southern yes. Illinois Wrestling. So, yes, tonight I made my... backstage interview debut. It's first time doing it ever.
You did a good job.
Honestly, you did. Thank you. I'm no mean gene.
No.
I'm not even a...
You're not a lean gene either. I'm just kidding.
I was trying to think of Tony Schiavone's NWA commentary partner.
Crockett? David Crockett?
I'm not even a David Crockett. But and I think, you know, I will say that part of it is Stride recently started putting the shows on YouTube.
Right.
So you can check those out. Because prior to that, you couldn't follow Stride other than watching
into this podcast. Right, you had to be there, yeah.
And getting the updates, but then you still don't see the action. So I know of names of people, but I don't recognize them, like,
sure.
You know, when we're getting ready for the show. And so, yeah, there was a lot of times where, you know, you come up, and you'd be like, okay, you're going to interview this guy and this guy. And I'm like, okay, what's been going on? What happened last month? What's the storyline? And trying to remember everybody's names and what's going on. But it was fun. It was good. Heath Hatton, I think I owe him one in the receipts department. But no, it was all in good fun. I'm hoping to be able to come back sometime and do this again.
Reprise the role, yeah. You may become our West Coast correspondent, and you can kind of...
I was going to say, can I be like the Lee Marshall and do like...
Yeah,
I can be like, hey, I'm here at a Stride party.
Yeah.
And just throw up a full screen. And
I like that idea. I like that. We may work in something with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and kind of to turn this a little bit more sappy and serious note, you know, Chad came out last summer around this time.
Came to Illinois.
Yes. Sorry. I'm sorry. Flew out to Illinois last summer when... we did a Stride show. It was a big show out at the ballpark, Rowan Park, and it was actually the night that Tyler and I won the tag team titles. And I don't even remember. Did I tell you the outcome of that? Like, did I tell you what was going to happen, or did you come out not knowing?
What do you mean, tell me the outcome? I think I knew, or had a suspicion, given how much money you give Tyler Heath on the side. I think you bought some, you know, curried some favors. But yeah, that's, you know, it was a good show, and I felt bad because at that show last year, I can't think of his name. I want to say Stevie Richards, and I know that's not Scott Phoenix.
Oh yeah,
Scott Phoenix injured his collarbone.
Yeah,
at that night, and as you will see, if you go to the YouTube Stride Pro Wrestling channel when the episode goes up, he had a chairs match against Dexter Roswell, and I'm like, if he gets injured,
Yeah.
I am never coming to another show that Scott Phoenix is on because I don't want to be his bad luck charm.
You're a snake bit, yeah. And you came out, you were here, you flew out. sorry, I keep going back to this. You had flown out a couple years ago for a show that we did in Mount Vernon. It was a fundraiser show. And
yeah, I think that was around the same weekend as Money in the Bank. And so I just tied a whole trip into.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't remember that, but okay, that makes sense. So you got to see firsthand how serious some fans of indie wrestling
yes.
take the product.
It made it great. It's still real to them.
Yeah. Tony Flood had cheated to win. I think it was Tony.
Yeah.
Used a chain or something. And this older gentleman came over and started yelling at me about how he cheated and how I needed to restart the match. And I'm like, dude, I'm just the ring announcer. And I think you were standing near me when all this was going down. And this guy was pissed. And I think he came back later in the night and chewed me out again. And I'm like, dude, I have no control here. So what do you think of this tequila?
I think
do you like tequila?
I typically? Do like tequila.
Okay.
And again, it's been several months since I've had tequila. No, this is a fine. I mean, that first shot kind of cleared up
it
the
does.
Nasal passages.
And, it does.
You know, cleared the esophagus out, but it's smooth. I know nothing about alcohol, so I'm making up words that I'm going to that I've heard other people say. I am more of a. I can't even think of what the main tequila brand is.
Patron?
No, that's too expensive for my blood. Yeah, I don't know. But whatever the normal...
Jose Cuervo?
There you go.
Okay.
Jose Cuervo. I'd put Terramana up there with it. And, you know, the gluten-free, you could really not taste the glutens in this. So...
Well, of course. I mean, if you look like The Rock, you can't have something with gluten in it. For
Christ's
sake.
I wonder how much of this The Rock actually drinks. So
that would be interesting. Now, I have, you know, when I was in college, and it wasn't on my 21st birthday, but we were going out to celebrate my 21st birthday. Some of my friends, we were at a bar. If you are from this area or in Southeast Missouri, there was a place called the Palladium. In Cape Girardeau, Missouri, where I went to school, and it was like total dive bar, but it was fun as hell. And you know, back when you're 21, who cares, right? So we were drinking beer. Well, throughout the night, someone got a shot of tequila and dropped it into my beer. And so I picked it up and drank it, and this happened a couple of times, and long story short, I ended up puking in the parking lot at the Palladium. Well, that was round one with tequila that did not turn out well. And then many years ago, after Facebook became a thing, I had reunited with some old classmates, and we met in St. Louis, where we all were from originally, or St. Louis area. And we were downtown, and, you know, I was drinking beer, and again... One of my friends from back in the day is quite successful, and he bought a bottle of Patron. And we started doing shots of Patron on this deck of this bar in St. Louis. Luckily, no one was under us on the deck because I had a repeat of the Palladium incident in Cape Girardeau. So I did not learn my lesson. So I do pace myself when it comes to tequila. I don't do shots. Typically, if I do have it, I'm drinking a margarita. I'm drinking it, you know, in a mixed drink. And the Terramana website does have recipes, and there are actually different variations. This is the Raspado, and I don't know exactly what that means, but they have a Blanco one that is a light. This is more of a, I mean, I hate to say it, it's more of a dark urine color, I guess, if you're not drinking enough water. Man, that's probably not the right way to describe it, but... there's a Blanco, and they have recipes for each kind. Now, do you get that into the tequila that you know the difference, or is there?
I don't know the difference of alcohol.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not a huge drinker. I mainly stick to a Jack and Coke.
Yeah.
Or a Captain Coke when I'm out drinking, and then we'll do the occasional tequila shot. And then in college, you know, speaking of your stories, when I was in college, we would meet up at, we would have parties at my friend Brian's house. Jose Cuervo would come out, and we would be doing shots all over. But you know, the only time I've been that sick on alcohol was New Year's of Y2J, okay. or Y2K. We called it Y2JC because my friend Jeremy.
Okay, okay.
But that was more on mudslides because after the eighth one, I lost track of how many I had had. Yeah, that was the first 2 hours of the year 2000. First two waking hours were not fun.
And you know the Skullbusters, the numbskulls, as I like to call them, are going to bust our balls about this because I'm apparently the liquor vicar or the vicar – liquor vicar, yeah, in their eyes. And so it's all in good fun. But we're not alcohol connoisseurs. I do like a beer every now and then. And, you know, this is good and we will probably end up, you know, with the rest of this probably mixing it with – mixing it with margaritas and having some mixed drinks and whatnot, you know, on a Taco Tuesday or something fun like that. So, but yeah, that's kind of the Terramana portion, the wrestling under the influence portion. And, you know, as we were talking about The Rock, he's still one of those guys I feel like that could come back. You know, he came back in 2013. There was a lot of criticism. We were there. Actually, I guess he came back in 2012 because we saw him at WrestleMania 29. Or 20. What was that? 20.
He hosted 27.
That was in Atlanta. Yeah.
Miami, he faced John Cena in the once-in-a-lifetime match.
Yes.
At 29, he faced John Cena in the once-in-a-lifetime again match. Lawsuit still pending.
Yeah.
And then WrestleMania 30, he came out and intro'd the show with Hogan and Austin.
And then when we were at WrestleMania 32, he
set his name on fire.
Yeah, and he technically beat Eric Rowan in about 4 seconds.
Yeah.
So to me, and again, I obviously am a fan of The Rock's, and I could see, you know, whereas if you didn't like The Rock or if, you know, you don't want those guys coming back and taking away the spotlight or whatever the case may be, I could see where there's criticism. And I know that CM Punk, and this was kind of a point of contention, and I got it. I didn't necessarily like the fact that he won the championship, but it was what it was, and it was setting up for the bigger story with Cena and The Rock, and that was part of CM Punk's problem, and I get it. I really do. But, I mean, he is a mega star. Mm-hmm. And not only was he at one time the biggest guy in wrestling, you know, he is arguably the biggest guy in Hollywood. And now that's transitioning, as we kind of alluded to earlier, to the world of the XFL. And you were a fan of the – now, were you a fan of that first incarnation back in 2001?
I mean, I watched back in 2001, but
You were in Southern Illinois then?
Yeah, I was in Southern Illinois, and I watched, but I wasn't – like, I wasn't watching every week. But then again – you know, they had like one good week,
right?
And then
it
was too gimmicky. It's,
yeah,
you know, and we were kind of talking about this afternoon, where the Attitude Era, because this came on the heels of, or the original XFL came on the heels of the Attitude Era. Vince McMahon tried to make Attitude Era football,
yeah,
and it just wasn't going to succeed in the long term because, you know, you look at the Attitude Era, that kind of fizzled out in 2001, as well with the demise of WCW and ECW, but the Attitude Era was not going to last forever.
Right.
Let's be honest. You cannot do the Attitude Era today.
Not at all. Not at all. Not even close.
No. You couldn't even do half the stuff.
Yeah.
Or go half as far as they went in the Attitude Era today. Yeah. But, so I think the original XFL was just kind of there as an alternative. The new version of the XFL, I think, actually... they learn from their mistakes, and they try to make it more about the football itself and not the gimmicks.
Yeah.
I did attend the first two home games for the LA Wildcats.
You were a season ticket holder for LA, right? Now, did LA have a team originally in the first
division? LA Renegades, I believe.
Okay.
And I don't understand why you put a team in LA.
Right.
Because in 2001, I can't remember if the Raiders were still there, if they had moved back to Oakland at this point, but the Rams were in St. Louis still.
Right.
So I think the Raiders were in Oakland, and LA didn't have a professional sports team. Now you have the Rams and the Chargers both there.
Yeah.
I can tell you, LA doesn't care about the Chargers. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see, and I don't know if it's a stadium issue thing, but I would have liked to have seen the XFL put teams where there aren't NFL teams. Because I think... if you're trying to build a new audience,
right,
don't compete with a bigger known.
And I think, and I don't know all the cities that have teams. I've obviously got a closer eye on the St. Louis market because that's where I'm from originally. And, you know, we lost the Rams, what, 4 or 5 years ago back to L.A. And there was a lot of unhappiness. Yeah. And it surprised me to see how many people embraced the Battle Hawks of St. Louis when it was announced in 2018 that XFL was coming back. And then when they announced the cities that were getting teams, there was a lot of excitement in St. Louis. And I think St. Louis legitimately is a sports town with the Cardinals, with the St. Louis Blues. They've had success. You know, the Blues obviously are the defending Stanley Cup champions. So there's that desire to have sports in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And I actually had toyed with the idea of going to a St. Louis Battlehawks game. Obviously, COVID hit, and that wasn't possible.
Yeah.
Now, you said you only got to go to two of your games. Mm-hmm. So how does that work as far as when they – did they refund the ticket holders, or how did they do that?
Initially, they said you can either get a refund for the remaining games, or you can put that money towards season tickets for next season.
Okay. Because right. At that point, they were gonna, yeah.
And I don't know all the reasoning behind why they shut it down completely, because it seems like they had the TV networks in or TV deals in place that would have carried over. I don't know if it's just Vince McMahon thinking that when this comes back, people aren't going to go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was kind of disappointing because, like I said, this wasn't a rehash of the gimmick XFL. This was solid football. I thought decently done football, and the games were a lot more exciting than the originals. There were, and even in LA, where the team didn't get off to a great start, but the second game, I mean, the first home game, yeah, it was not, it was, I think, the lowest attended of all 11 teams' games, or down towards the bottom. But again, you're dealing with LA, who has a lot of sports teams, and if your team's not winning, they don't care.
Because right.
They have so many, and especially since the games were going on during basketball season. So you had the Lakers, you had the Clippers playing.
Oh, okay.
Plus you had the Kings, hockey season was still in swing. It just, but the team, the people that were there were passionate into the games. It wasn't like they were just watching.
Yeah.
The second game, yeah, the attendance was even lower.
Okay.
Because everybody's got that first game out.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, we've seen what it is. I think had they kept going, you could have built a team. And this is the big thing for even The Rock and everybody that is part of the team that bought the XFL is, I think initially back in 2001, they said, okay, everybody loves football. We're going to bring out the XFL. It's going to be great. We're going to be huge.
Yeah.
And at the time, WWE was riding high as this thing. I think they expected everyone's going to fall into it because, you know, all the wrestling fans are going to jump onto it and football fans will stay there. I still don't know if starting your league the week after the Super Bowl is smart because I kind of think like people want to miss football a little bit to get into it instead of just rolling right into it. And I would say, you know, it's kind of like opening a restaurant. You're not going to be successful your first 3 to 5 years. You've got to build a brand.
Right.
You have to build loyalty, build the audience. Let the audience see what you're giving them.
Yeah.
And so I hope that The Rock has, you know, looking with that mindset of if they come back in 2021, you know, immediately if COVID allows this to happen, understand that, especially I think we've seen now basketball's back, hockey's back, baseball's back, football starting up, all the ratings are down.
Yeah.
Obviously attendance is down because you can't attend games.
Sure.
But don't expect people just to come be like, oh, great, we have the XFL back, we're going in.
Right.
People, I think for the next year, are still going to be hesitant to go out and be amongst large crowds.
Yeah.
So hopefully, with all that said, they have a game plan that will ensure them a good, again, 3 to 5 years of building a brand before calling it quits.
So have you read much about the plan in terms of, you know, obviously, The Rock and his team, and it's not just The Rock, but that's the most recognizable name. Of course, his ex-wife, Danny Garcia, is part of the Seven Buck production company that is behind all of this as well. And I guess she is the first female owner or co-owner of a major sports franchise.
Well, there is a member of the Atlanta Dream WNBA team that's a female.
Okay.
But I guess that does the WNBA qualify as a major sports team? Because without their partnership with the NBA, the WNBA would not exist. And it's not too slight, as much as I'm laughing and saying that. It's just, it's a fact. It's WNBA has been around for over 20 years, but I don't think that's a brand that has grown significantly to,
I agree. And I understand what you're, the point you were making with that, but I wonder, you know, are they planning to do again the 8 cities that have already committed? I know that he had posted a picture on social media with all of the helmets. I guess he got the keys, so to speak, to the castle recently, and so he's ready to take over, or his team is ready to take over. I don't want to just give him the credit, but obviously he's going to be the focus of our conversation for this. So are you optimistic? You know, is the third time going to be the charm for this, or is this thing so snake bit that it's going to just... I'm curious under his vision and his direction. And then people were talking, you know, let him buy the WWE next and have his team run that as well. So I guess we wait and see kind of what happens with the XFL first.
And I think that's the key is I don't know anything about who else is involved or what the business strategy is. Because the only thing I've read is The Rock bought
XFL. You're right, sure.
And, you know, he bought it with a group of people. So that was the big thing, too, is like he put in a lot of money according to my bank account, but he didn't really put that much in according to The Rock's bank account. So if he loses it, it's not going to, you know, he won't be coming back to do WrestleCon.
It's significantly more than the $7 that is the name of his production company.
But yeah, I don't know because, and this is, you know, my feeling right now is sport. I am not interested in any of the major sports leagues at this time, given things in our climate that are going on and going on with sports, they've alienated me as a viewer. So I'm curious to see what the XFL will do in those regards. And I'm also curious to see, are they going to keep the same cities? Are they going to realign with my, you know, thoughts earlier of going into cities that don't have football to try to get a new audience? My big thing, if they're going to change anything, I hope they change the logos for the teams because the Battle Hawks is about the only logo that looks cool. Everything else looks like it was done in clip art in about 5 minutes before a 3-day weekend. And that, you know, LA Wildcats had, I think the, and this is, you know, coming from someone who moved to LA, I'm not from there originally. I don't have the loyalty to the LA letters. You know, I don't have an LA tattoo. I don't wear, I don't support any LA sports team. So yes, I would like to see an actual logo other than just the letters LA.
Well, and you and I, as we transition out of XFL talk, you and I had talked, gosh, probably 3 months ago now, about wrestling without fans. And, you know, you mentioned how some of the major sports are coming back without fans or with limited fans. We've seen an evolution of sorts since we talked in June with WWE and AEW and even TNA with their audiences. And you know, I think WWE was just starting to kind of sprinkle in the developmental talent in the audiences. AEW was already doing that. Now we've evolved to Thunderdome for WWE and AEW has fans. They've done limited fans. Stride Pro Wrestling, by the way, we have very limited fan, very, very limited audience members because of Illinois' restrictions still. And, you know, Florida obviously is a little more lax on those restrictions. But are you watching on TV like you were before? And is it because of the lack of a crowd? Does that play a role in your enjoyment of this? Or is it the storylines falling flat and you not being entertained like you were 15, 20, 30 years ago?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely the entertainment factor is the biggest key. And this is where I, you know, we were talking earlier today about the mindset of fans when it comes to AEW versus WWE.
Right.
And, you know, I want both companies to succeed. I don't have a stake in one being better than the other.
Right.
But it surprises me. What the no crowd has done, or no fans has done, is show me how out of date WWE is. Because AEW put, you know, wrestlers that they weren't using for Dynamite, that wrestlers that were on Dark or just, I think, may have been in the area that were local, put them around ringside to give an ambience to the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, and those wrestlers, and maybe it's because they come from an indie background, and so they're used to going to shows, but they played into the atmosphere of the show. And AEW was wise enough to even put in storylines for using those guys. Like, Sugar Dunkerton became Pineapple Pete, and Chris Jericho would call him out on commentary when he'd see him on camera, and that led to a match. I kind of hoped that Sugar would get signed to AEW and he would become a bigger part of of the roster, which hasn't happened yet. And I know, like, they've added, you know, they would have people in the crowd that would interact with wrestlers and lead to matches. WWE, when they didn't have an audience at all, their wrestlers were still coming out, acting as if a crowd was there, doing the same mannerisms, doing the same promo style. Like, it was so regimented that, again, it just showed how structured WWE is. And there was no looseness to it. Whereas I think that's another key to Dynamite, is they feel kind of off the cuff.
Yeah.
And then when they started using the developmental talent, you know, as I said, AEW wrestlers around ringside added to the show, these developmental talents just felt like they had never seen a wrestling show before. And I don't know if that's coming from the direction of behind the scenes of WWE and telling them what to do.
Right.
Or if it's just people who don't know how to cheer or boo wrestlers.
Yeah.
And now with Thunderdome, I've seen a little bit of what the NBA is doing, and they put, like, digital cutouts of people in the crowd.
Uh-huh.
So the seats still look uniformed.
Okay.
And apparently in a recent game, Miro and Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy were featured on, I don't know if they were on the TNT games, which wouldn't make sense to cross promotion, but the Thunderdome aspect is a cool concept, but to me it's too busy because everybody's background is different.
Okay.
And so I can't, and that's like, you know, there have been cases where people have put inappropriate images up, and I'm like, the people that are finding that must be paying, like, pausing it and going through every frame, because I'm watching it going like, I can't even tell who's up there for the split second that it's on camera. So I think the difference is also Thunderdome does make the shows look more bright, whereas the Performance Center was very dark.
Right.
Thing. And, I don't think that helped in the presentation for WWE. So I do like the brighter aspect, but the main thing is WWE's booking is beyond stale, beyond repetitive, as you texted me on, you know, last Monday, and it was the Street Profits versus Andrade and
Garza,
Angel Garza, and you're like, I feel like I've seen this match is on every time I turn on Raw. And if you go back over the last 2 months, they have probably been in a segment every week for at least 4 to 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's where I wish they could learn how to switch up the booking and make learn to how to promote a feud without the people actually fighting.
That makes sense. That makes sense. And the good thing about, you know, you coming into town, we've connected and, you know, we text and talk several times a week anyway, but we talked a lot over lunch about kind of AEW and WWE and how it's kind of like politics. You know, the Democrats, you're either all in, pardon the pun, or, you know, and same thing with Republicans. Like, I find myself more in the middle in politics, and I probably would say I definitely lean more toward WWE when it comes to wrestling. That's not to say that I don't like and I don't fully get involved in AEW and Dynamite, but I do watch and I listen to the podcasts that Conrad Thompson hosts, which are now all, with the exception of Bruce Pritchard, they are all cheerleading shows for AEW, because three of the hosts are current talent on that product, and then Eric Bischoff was recently on AEW. So, you know, I am familiar with it. I am there with it. I know it. I get it. I think the biggest annoyance for me as a fan is everybody saying AEW is an alternative to WWE, and at least on the surface, when you look at their talent pool, and especially here recently, all of these cast-offs that were let go over, and I the cast-off is not the right word, it sounds derogatory, but all of these former WWE talent that got let go after the big purge in April are surfacing in AEW. Not all of them, but there are a lot. Brody Lee, Matt Cardona, Miro now, which is too close to Mark Merrill for me. But so, you know, the former Rusev, the former Luke Harper, the former Zack Ryder, you've got Cody Rhodes, you've got the former Goldust, you've got the revivals there now, or FTR is there. You know, Arn Anderson, even though he was behind the scenes at WWE, you get the point that I'm the picture I'm painting here. So is it an alternative to WWE? Chris Jericho, of course, Moxley, Jake Hager. Thank you. He was Jack Swagger. That's right. you know, and then also, and I'm, you know, and I'm not doing this to pick a fight, but if WWE would have had a mimosa match, people would have shit all over it, and still today would say, people are still complaining about aspects from the Boneyard match or from the Firefly Funhouse. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, what is it that AEW, I feel like, and sometimes they do get crucified and criticized, but what is it about that AEW crowd, which I feel like, why can't we as fans, and we said it earlier, fans are the worst critics of anything, but why can't we enjoy two companies or three companies or however many companies? Is you know, I get brand loyalty, but I'm not going to go out of my way to knock Pepsi if I'm offered a Coke or vice versa. So why can't we watch AEW or WWE the same way we would enjoy, you know, a particular brand of tequila, for example, as we're drinking here tonight, or, you know, watching the news or watching a sitcom? You know, we can watch more than one sitcom. Why is it with wrestling many fans become so polarized one way or the other, do you think?
Well, I think part of it is right now because WWE has been the only game, only major landscape of wrestling for so long that there are fans that are wanting an alternative and wanting it because WWE has not been good for the last 10 years. And I say not good.
Again, the stories.
The story. Again, we have been wrestling fans for 30 years, so...
Almost 40.
So a lot of stuff that we grew up on, if they recycle it and redo it, we're like, oh, we've seen that before. But to a fan who's only been watching for 5-10 years, maybe hasn't seen that storyline and it's new to them. Although now with the network, like going back and watching older stuff is easier than when we were.
Right.
Well, yes, you and I growing up weren't trading tapes to watch WWF.
Right,
you
know, right.
See that stuff. So I think part of it is just wanting an actual alternative, because even though you have Impact, even though you have Ring of Honor, those promotions are not as accessible to view. Depending on your, you know, geographic location. And I go back to the Attitude Era, you know, when we had WWF, WCW, and ECW, you had, I think each brand probably had the same loyal fan base. And of course the ECW fans were probably like the AEW fans now, like they're the greatest and everything else is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And me being a diehard ECW fan from like 97 through 2001, I still watch Nitro. I watched Raw. I enjoyed them for what they were.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked, like, ECW gave me an alternative and gave me variety.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's missing in WWE right now is variety, because the matches are all the same. And I think, you know, it goes into commentary. Like, you cannot be watching a match and just be listening to the commentary, and you can know exactly when they're going to go to commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can watch a match and know and turn the commentary off and still know when they're going to go to commercial, because the action will spill to the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that formulaic. Whereas AEW's presentation is different. It is, you know, they'll go to picture-in-picture more than cut to straight commercial, or action will still be going on, you know, and it's like the old WCW Saturday night where they're like, hey, tape machines are rolling if this match ends, which I would still love to see at some point.
Yeah.
A match end during commercial break and show me what the end. But I think as to the aspect of, you know, what's being different too, or fans choosing one or the other, I am just, I think one of it is we as a society, because now with social media where everyone has a voice, and instead of using that voice for good to promote, you know, I say it on my podcast a lot. We've said it here before in episodes where people want to complain more than what's a good word for promoting
positive? Praise or be praise, positive, yes. Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't understand that. I don't get that aspect. And I think it's, you know, it has to go back also into the storytelling. Like we said, there are these guys that are showing up in AEW or the ones that went to Impact, you know, EC3, Eric Young, Heath, Don't Call Me Slater Anymore. they all come in with basically the same storyline, which is, I was held down by WWF and, you know, that old man's out of touch. And it's like, but you keep signing extensions on your contract. You're the one that chose to go there. And yes, a lot of them were, you know, I don't know if you heard the comments about that Rusev gave in a recent interview out about Rusev Day and how Vince McMahon said, oh, the fans don't really care about that. They're just messing with you.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, is that really that out of touch? Or is he just not wanting to promote Rusev? And same way with, you know, former Zack Ryder, where Zack Ryder got himself over and the WWE didn't capitalize on it. And
right.
It's because they didn't have a plan in place for him. And they couldn't adjust and say, like, man, we've got this guy who's popular. Let's get him.
And it kind of ties back to our original discussion with The Rock. You know, I mean, obviously, in 1996, it was a much different environment. You know, would The Rock be, or Stone Cold Steve Austin for that matter, would these two guys, who arguably are two of the biggest, if not the biggest, products of the WWE, would they have gotten over in 20, let's take 2020 out of the equation because everything sucks, but in 2018, 2019, would these guys have been allowed to get over? You know, how many talents, you know, we talked about Zack Ryder, we talked about Rusev, how many talents are out there that have proven themselves, but that's not part of the current narrative, so they're not going to get that push or get that, you know, that edge, if you will, and break that glass ceiling and become the megastars, because there's nobody right now. I don't see anybody on any channel that's going to be a mega star. That's going to be Rock, Steve Austin, John Cena level stars. I don't see it right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because I'm older and I'm more out of touch with what, you know, we're way out. We're the parents of the demographic that WWE is going after now. So, you know, I maybe it's partly us as fans. You know, if you're a younger fan listening to this, who do you see? Or if you're our age, who do you see as being a big star? There's potential there. There could be. But when I think about it, it's like, you know, are these guys really, or women, because I do think the women are getting a much, that is one thing that has changed a lot over the last 20 years, is that the women have a much more significant role in the storytelling. And, you know, I do feel like too, a lot, I turn on wrestling and there are a lot more women's matches or segments with the women. And it's not just lingerie matches and bra and panty matches and pillow fights. They're actually having matches and telling stories as well.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And you know, looking back at Steve Austin did, you know, he coined Austin 316 in June of 96. He didn't win the title until March or April of 98.
Right.
It's almost 2 years.
Right, right.
That, you know, today, if he didn't win that title within the first month of Austin 316, fans would be rioting and complaining and be like, oh, WWE is terrible.
Yeah. Why aren't they pushing him?
Why aren't they pushing? Yeah, they're just burying him in a feud with Yokozuna or, you know, or Savio Vega. Rocky Maivia comes in, huge push out of the gate because first, third generation superstar is going to be good. Bombs.
Right.
Dramatically. If this was current day WWE, that probably would have been it.
He would have been Manu.
Yeah. And, you know, it took time to really embrace the character of The Rock.
Which yeah.
would happen because of the Nation of Domination. You don't have that storyline to build up this character, because I think if you would have just said, okay, you're going to be The Rock and start doing your thing, I don't think he would have evolved, you know, so mm-hmm. to speak. He would have, fans would just be like, what's going on here? But again, it took him, you know, he debuted in 96. He wins his first world title in
98.
It was two years
exactly, because he debuted at the Survivor Series 96. He won the championship at Survivor Series 98.
Okay, at Survivor Series. I was thinking WrestleMania was his first title. You're right, because he lost back to Austin at it's WrestleMania. Yeah. So for 2 years, and that's a quick 2 years too.
Right.
But yeah, it's, you're not going to get that now. Like, if the new talent comes in, even, and you can look at Roman Reigns, how long has he been there? How many stop and start, you know, pushes has he gotten? And it's just, fans also don't want Roman. And is it because they don't like Roman, or because WWE said, no, you're going to accept this guy as the new big star?
Right.
When fans are being like, no, we want Rusev, we want Zack Ryder, we want the people that we feel connected to, not the person that you're pushing down our throat. And I don't know. I don't know, you know, I'm curious to see if this new heel Roman Reigns will take off.
Yeah.
And because that's what the fans have been wanting. So right. will they be open to it, or will they still say, no, the writing sucks?
Right. Well, what do you think, in as we kind of wind down this episode, you know, Vince McMahon is obviously, it all ends with him. You know, whatever happens on TV, his fingerprints are on, for better or for worse. And you know, we had the highest of highs in the 80s and, you know, into the Attitude Era. And we had the lows of, you know, Gobbledygooker and T.L. Hopper and the goon, all those silly gimmicks and to where we are today. And again, taking the COVID-19 piece of this puzzle out, obviously, McMahon has been at the helm for 40 years-ish running things. Mm-hmm. He's got a publicly traded company. He's a billionaire. And again, not a billionaire like Tony Khan, but he's a billionaire. He's obviously done things right. He's bought out his rivals. He has his own network with the streaming, the movies, the books, the cartoons, the stuffed animals, the t-shirts. He's obviously done things right in terms of business. And some will argue the way that he's done it and whatnot. My point is, though, for 40 years, he has sustained this and it has been successful. You know, this past quarter was their
biggest,
one of their biggest quarters or whatever the case may be. So obviously some things are going right. However, there's so much disgruntled and there's so many people that are irritated and fans are annoyed and talent is not happy, allegedly, and then getting released and whatnot. Is Vince McMahon in some way also to be credited because he has had this staying power and he's kept things going for as long as he has? And if he retires or if he passes away or becomes incapacitated and can't run the company anymore, and presumably Triple H and Stephanie take over the helm, you know, obviously there will be changes made, I would imagine, as anybody would change things. But I kind of prescribe to the theory of be careful what you wish for, because there's been that business acumen that has worked for 40 years. And AEW, to me, is still in the infant stage. You know, it has not even been on TV for a year yet, and it's not even been a company for more than 2 years, I don't think. I mean, I don't have the timeline in front of me, but so as much as I want AEW to be successful, I also think that fans are way too quick to crap on WWF or WWE and be like, we need change and Vince needs to retire and step down. But for some reason, this company outlived the AWA, WCW, ECW. You know, and if you look at it, really, TNA outlived WCW and ECW. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it had a longer shelf life. But we remembered so nostalgically these other companies. And so I don't know what my point is with all this, but well, I feel like WWE, for as much as we criticize it, they're obviously doing some things right.
Yes, and I think you look back, Vince McMahon had the vision to kind of see the growing influence of cable television, of satellite television.
Yeah.
That the other promotions didn't see or didn't want to acknowledge.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, he had Vince made the deal, television deals. You know, luckily he had a good ally with USA Network.
Right.
And that relationship has grown and,
yeah,
and worked out. You know, on WCW's side, they were a business, even though Ted Turner owned them, when he sold the Turner business with AOL, they didn't have anybody going to bat for WCW to keep them in business.
Right.
They were just another business venture.
Yeah.
Whereas Vince owning WWE, you know, they went from USA to Spike for 5 years, mm-hmm, and then came back to USA. They did all the syndicated programming in the 80s. So Vince had that vision and has made good business deals and then learn how to market.
You know, yeah.
The marketing is the key. Like WCW, even in the Attitude Era, did have more marketing, more merchandise, but it wasn't as, other than the NWO shirt, I don't think there was that much, you know,
right,
variety.
Yeah.
Is one. Yeah, because in WWE had The Rock, Austin, Mankind, Triple H, Sonny, Sable, you know. WCW had the NWO, Hulk Hogan, and I mean, Sting was there, but he wasn't,
yeah,
I don't think he was promoted as well. And so now, yes, is it just that the business has moved too far forward from what Vince McMahon is capable of? Because, you know, you look at Apple. Apple was very innovative in the early, you know, I'd say mid-90s to early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 5 years, and granted, Steve Jobs, who was behind a lot of that, has passed away. But I don't see Apple being as innovative in the last 5 years as they were previous to that. Like, they just keep rehashing,
mm-hmm,
oh, look, here's a new iPhone that we took something else away that you liked. Here's AirBuds.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really innovative or creating new content. And WWE is kind of the same way. They were great, but they also, during the Attitude Era, had they not had the competition from ECW and WCW, would they have changed their modus operandi? And I think that's where AEW may hopefully come in and make them realize, like, hey, we've got to change. We've got to do something different.
Do you think they will?
If they start losing rate, if they start losing money. But, again, they've already signed huge contracts. You know, and I'm curious to see where television viewing is going to be in 5 years. Is
right.
it all going to be, you know... I think we mentioned it when I had you on Positive Cynicism, where you're saying, you know, your kids don't watch television.
Right.
Regularly. You sit down and watch,
yeah,
network television at a certain night,
not at
a certain time to catch a show. Is wrestling going to be that same way?
Yeah.
Or is wrestling, you know, part of sports, like, you don't want to watch it later because you don't want it spoiled. You
right.
need to watch it live.
So do you think, too, and now, yeah, not getting too deep into the weeds, yeah, but we talked about this over lunch as well, you know, WWE is so structured and so regimented, and AEW is so, you know, loose and, you know, hey, you know, hey, do what you want to do, and, you know, the talent is in control here, and yada, yada, yada. I mean, I feel like there's probably a better middle ground where maybe AEW will tighten up a little bit and WWE will loosen things up a little bit, and I think from that regard, we get a better product from both companies. But until WWE really, I think, goes back to that original formula of letting superstars be themselves, turned up to a 10 or 11 on, yeah, on the dial, as has kind of become the cliche, because AEW does do that. But I feel like there's a lot with AEW that needs to kind of – there needs to be a management system in place, yeah, and not micromanage – like WWE is. So I feel like WWE scales it down a little bit, mm-hmm, AEW turns it up a little bit, and we're going to find a better balance.
Yeah. Yeah, you find that happy medium, because I think the big thing from AEW is, you know, their big criticism is it's a bunch of spot monkeys, just doing high spots. And, you know, as we saw with the Matt Hardy bump at the All Out pay-per-view, I think it was All Out or All In or whichever one, that's a bump that shouldn't have been taken in normal common sense, you know, feeling. It's like that spot added nothing to the match. It wasn't going to be the ending of the match. So it's just a reckless spot.
Yeah.
And I think there's too much of that in indie wrestling in general.
I agree.
Where, because you have to keep setting the bar higher and higher.
Yeah.
You can't come in and, you know, in our day, Jake the Snake Roberts hitting a DDT was death. You're out.
Yeah.
Now, if you got pinned off a DDT, you're a job. You know, no one's taking you serious.
Yeah.
And so you have to constantly be upping the bar to a status, to a level that is unnecessary. And I find it cringeworthy more than exciting and more than interesting.
I agree.
You know, I have a respect for anybody that puts their body, I don't say on the line, but, you know, the damage just done from taking a back bump,
sure,
for example, or taking a body slam.
Yeah.
I don't want to see people actually get injured and hurt. And so when you're falling 10, 15 feet onto concrete, what's the reward? Other than having some fans chant holy poop at you. You know?
Right. So, you can say shit here.
I'd like to be family friendly.
You've not been around my family much, I guess. the excellent points. And always a good conversation. And you know, we'll obviously have more of these talks in the weeks and months to come. And not in person, unfortunately, because you live halfway across the country. But it's been good. Anything else you want to say or wrap up? I know you've, with Positive Cynicism, you've been a part of the sponsorship of the For Kids' Sake Virtual 5K now. It's the Superhero 5K, though.
It's Superhero 5K. It's virtual. You can do it anywhere. By the time this show drops, the cutoff for getting a t-shirt mailed to you in time to do the race, which is at the end of September of 2020, has passed. But you can still register. It's, you know, For Kids' Sake, I think it's a good cause for, it helps orphans in Bangladesh. But, you know, I got involved with it because I'm good friends with the organizer. But even if I wasn't, I think, even if you don't want to sponsor this organization, there are so many more charitable organizations that are out there. And with the way, you know, everyone has been impacted by COVID in 2020, if you have the extra money or time, whatever, I just encourage people to, I'm going to kind of segue off that. We're coming up on the election. You mentioned the election earlier. You know, we're at a time right now that I feel we are so divided as a country, which I don't actually think is true. I think it's more media manipulation and political manipulation, wanting us to be divisive with each other. So I would say, if you are able to help others out, help them. If you're not, have a conversation with someone who doesn't share the same opinions of you, and actually have a conversation. Don't go in just wanting to get your point across. Listen to someone to see why they don't share your opinion, because I've had these conversations multiple times over the last few weeks, and each time I've come away hoping the other person felt the same way, where we're not that far apart. We don't hate each other. We don't want, you know, wish harm on the other person, but we just see things on a broad scale differently.
Sure. Makes sense. And back on the race, I'll have a link in the notes section. And really, for runners out there, runner etiquette is we don't wear the race shirt on race day. So wear something superhero related. Take a picture. I think they're encouraging people to take pictures, and because it is a virtual 5K, I'm going to get out there and do it. And it's going to be fun. And just support this cause. And the Stride Pro Wrestling and My 1-2-3 Cents action figure drive is coming up. It's really technically underway now. If you have a couple extra bucks that you want to throw into the pot and purchase figures, or if you have figures that you know, last year, Zach Whitecotton, for example, had been collecting and had a bunch of Mint on Card figures, and he donated, I think, 17 of them, and that gave him 17 chances to win the raffle. And he ended up winning the poster, the autographed Four Horsemen poster that you donated last year. And we've got some things in the works for this year's incentives and whatnot. But it's going to be significantly different because we were collecting toys at the Stride shows, and Stride shows are much different now because of COVID-19. That's why I'm encouraging people to get involved online. So like Chad said, if you can't sign up for the virtual 5K, or if you're not a runner, share the link, or, you know, support the toy drive. You know, Five Below has a great selection of figures that are $5 or less, hence the name Five Below. So those are my words of encouragement for you this week. I hope that you have a great rest of your week. Thanks for listening, and be sure to come back and support not only the Jittery Monkey brand, but also Positive Cynicism as the hashtag PCPN, as the kids on social media are saying these days. Chad, as always, thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Anytime.
All righty, friends. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.